Hello and welcome to the call. I'd appreciate it if everyone would kindly hit the *6 buttons on your phone so we can mute all background noises. And at the end, we'll take a few questions, and at that time, I'll just ask you to push *6 again so we can hear you. But basically, the format for this call is simply that I will be interviewing, actually posing questions to Jed Diamond as a follow-up to our teleseminar that we did last week. For those of you who don't know me, I am Dotsie Bragel, and I'm founder of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, which can be located at nabbw.com, and boomerwomenspeak.com, which are the number one sites on major search engines for baby boomer women. I am passionate about educating and empowering my generation of women. And I hope you'll excuse me today. I knew I had to do this call, so I've been sparing my voice all day, but I'm having a horrible allergy attack, so I've got my water to the right and my Kleenex to the left, and I hope you'll just bear with me, and I hope my voice holds out. So anyway, since launching BoomerWomenSpeak.com in 2002, I've been connecting, encouraging, and supporting boomer women on a daily basis, and I dedicate a great portion of my time to creating opportunities that inspire women to explore their passions and live life to the fullest. Our sites are proudly sponsored by Me Again products, which are tried and true products for midlife women, and they can be located at meagainonline.com. And we're also sponsored by SunSuite, for those of you who are interested in natural digestive health solutions. And SunSuite can be located online at plumsmart.net. Okay, if you're not a member of the NABBW, the fee to join is typically $75, but if you're interested in joining after the call today, feel free to email me at dots@nabbw.com, and I'll be happy to send you a link to join at the discounted rate of $50. All of our teleseminars are recorded and transcribed, and they are free to the members of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women. So once you become a member, one of the many member benefits is that you can listen to or print any of our past teleseminars, and there are approximately 60 there now. And they range in topic from nips and tucks to menopause and elder care and everything in between. Okay, let's get started by allowing me to introduce Jed Diamond. Jed, are you there?
Yes, I am, Dotsie. Hi.
Hi. And you know what? I am going to give the introduction again because some people who registered for the call are different than the ones who registered last week. So I just want to fill them in so they know the expert that you are. Jed is the director of the Men Alive, which is a health program that helps men live long and well. And since its inception, he has been on the board of advisors of the Men's Health Network. He's also a member of the International Society for the Study of the Aging Male and serves as a member of the International Scientific Board of the World Congress on Men's Health. He has been a licensed psychotherapist for over 40 years and is the author of 7 books, including the international best-selling Male Menopause, that has thus far been translated into over 24 languages. His latest book, The Irritable Male Syndrome, was published by Rodale Press, and it is also now in paperback. He's written 9 booklets, produced 10 audio cassette programs, and produced a video program for the public broadcasting system. He's taught classes around the world on this topic. He's also been a consultant for business executives between the ages of 40 and 60 who want to use the midlife passage to achieve lifelong personal and professional success. He lives with his wife, Carlin, on Shimmons Ridge above Bloody Run Creek in Northern California, and they are the proud parents of 5 grown children and 11 grandchildren. Welcome, Jed.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. How are you today?
I'm very well.
Good. Well, as you know, this is an hour call, which is a follow-up to our call from last week. And do you have anything you want to share before we get started with these questions?
Well, just as you described, these are issues that are affecting people all the time and all over the world. I get emails every day from women and men who are dealing with a whole host of relationship-related issues that touch on these areas of male menopause and irritable male syndrome. So I'm really happy to be talking to your audience to give them some insight into these issues and answer the questions that you have.
Okay, good. Well, last week you had to get right off the call, which I can appreciate because I know you're busy. And there was a caller who had a question that we didn't get to. Her question has to do with men and how they measure success. And she has learned that many men measure success based on income.
Right.
And she is interested in knowing how you can communicate to a man the importance of putting relationships above money. Apparently, as we know, some men do focus on the dollar, and as a result, they're not in the home to be with the spouse or be with the children and really help forge those relationships that are so important. So the question is, how do we go about convincing men otherwise that relationships are the most important thing and definitely ahead of money?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that women can do, starting with themselves recognizing the value of relationships over money. Often women give voice to that, but when things are tight, they get very frightened. And, my God, if he isn't working or he doesn't have a great job, our life is going to fall apart. The whole society puts a lot of emphasis, obviously, on money and earning money, and that's part of the stress that so many people are experiencing now as the economy is really closing down in many ways. So what I tell women is that the best thing you can do is, rather than trying to convince him that money is not as important as relationship, but when he naturally is drawn towards relationship, when he wants to spend time with the kids or he's got an opportunity to do something with family but says, geez, I don't know whether, you know, I can do it because of the job, you encourage him. You go, you know, there's room for both. We can have time for us, you know, and we can be sure that there's enough money. And honor that he wants to support the family and he wants to be able to make a living. Appreciate him for that, but also appreciate him for the time he spends with the kids, the time he spends with his friends, the time he spends in other relationships.
And that's a good point, because I think sometimes what happens is women get so frustrated because the men aren't around that when they are around, it becomes a nagging scene as opposed to, oh, thank God you're around.
Right.
So
and really enjoying him around, not just as many situations seem to come across as, well, he's around, so now he can do all those things that I want him to do, rather than appreciate him that you're together. Rather than just be a honey-do session where honey
right.
do this, honey do that, honey do the other thing.
Right. Okay, well, one thing that I'm going to review before we get into some more of the questions, and actually these questions come right from the site at the forums at boomerwomenspeak.com, and I will warn you that some of the people who have asked these questions sound pretty upset with men at midlife.
Sure.
Some are married and some aren't. But just to kind of put things in perspective, because some of the questions have to do with male menopause, and you addressed that last week, but they have to do with, like, cheating and you know, lying, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought before we got into some of these questions, it would be important to point out the top 10 life changes that you associate with male menopause. And, of course, I got this right off your site. Do you mind if I just read down this
list? No, go right ahead.
Okay, because I think some of this is a little framework for some of the questions, because it just shows where men are at midlife at times.
Yep.
the list of 10 are: hormone production levels are dropping, and you addressed that last week. Sexual vigor is diminishing, and that is very important to men. Their physical stamina and strength is decreasing. Children are leaving. Parents are dying. Job horizons are narrowing. I mean, these are huge.
Yeah.
Marriages, sometimes a second or third marriage, they're sometimes breaking up. Friends are getting sick, hopes are being lost, and dreams are being left unsatisfied. Wow, it sounds like a list for how to be depressed at midlife. But I have to say that many of the men I know are definitely experiencing at least one, if not several, of those. And so, you know, what we want to do is kind of keep these things in mind when we're talking about how upset and frustrated we can become with midlife men.
Exactly. And just one point I make about these is that we often make the assumption that, that women are interested and involved in relationships and men are mostly interested and involved, you know, in their work or out in the world. But what I've found over the years is that men are very involved in relationships. So when these things change, when job losses change, when the hormone levels change, often, you know, there's a huge amount of fear that's going on inside. But the man is already feeling vulnerable, and so he often doesn't express the fears and the concerns that are going on inside, and he keeps a hard, stiff upper lip exterior, which alienates him even more from the family that could support him if he could let down his guard and let them know what was going on inside.
Right. Okay, well, one of the first questions was, what do you see as the biggest fears and concerns of men at midlife? And I would have to say, it probably ties into that top 10 list.
Yeah.
You know, this is what the men are afraid of. They're, you know, they've had this dream and they're afraid, you know, life's going to pass them by.
Right.
And, you know, that a lot of them are losing parents and spouses, not necessarily spouses to death, but losing marriages, et cetera. So could you put your finger on, like, the top three fears for midlife men?
Yeah, what I hear in the men that, you know, will open themselves up to me as they do when we start counseling is probably the most common fear that men have is just loss of vigor, you know, loss mm-hmm. of energy, loss of, you know, they're tired more, their body aches more. There's just a feeling of things don't work. Some guys will say it feels like everything is breaking down. Everything is a struggle. Secondly, there's fears and concerns about sexual loss. And those are both loss of erections or loss of sexual desire or both. And the third is, you know, loss of jobs, loss of livelihood. Many of us are working into our later years because we have to. And when the economy is as crazy as it is, even if we have a job, we're concerned about the possibility of losing it. And the final, you know, kind of top area that we see of men's concerns is just the feeling of not being useful, not being valuable. You know, men have this strong need to protect and serve, and when we don't feel that we're able to protect or we're able to serve, whether it's our family or community, we feel irrelevant. We feel like our life, you know, has no great value, and often the irritability and anger that is expressed is a cover for these real feelings of loss.
Right. So if we really could just get them to address some of the issues, maybe we could be more helpful.
Exactly.
But one of the things that I'm curious about, and it is something that came up in the forums, is with the women's movement and more women being in the workplace, you might think that that would take some of the pressure off midlife men when it comes to the whole money issue. Has that helped or hindered, or does it enter the picture? Do they feel the competition? I mean, can you shed any light on
yeah.
that?
Well, it's a two-edged sword. You know, I think many men will say to me and say to their wives, you know, I'm really happy that I'm not the only one that's carrying the load, that you're sharing in the breadwinning function. A lot of men feel very great about that. The downside is that men often feel in their own work that they're now competing not only against other men, but against women. And the truth is men are trained from the time that we're very young to compete with other men. We know how to do that. We have some mm-hmm. skills at it, even if, you know, we end up on the losing end sometimes. So we're used to that. But we're not used to competing with women. you know, in the same venue. You know, we didn't play basketball with women growing up. We didn't play baseball on opposite teams where women, you know, were our competitors and were on the other side. And so it's very confusing to men. So the result is that it's a, you know, an approach avoidance kind of experience, is that we're glad that women are sharing the workload with us, but we also are often very confused and ambivalent about, you know, our ability to succeed in the world and feel that we're manly when we're faced with women that are our bosses sometimes, our equals sometimes, you know, our competitors sometimes. And for many of us, that's still very confusing.
Right. Okay. Well, I was hoping that we helped take some of the pressure off. And I'm sure in some sense we do, but there's still just that competitive spirit within the man.
Well, and we're seeing it, you know, with my children and grandchildren. I have, as you mentioned, I have 5 grown children and 11 grandchildren. And I see in the next generation of kids that grew up more in an equal environment where, you know, women did compete with them and that they played games together and the girls played sports like the boys played sports. You know, there's much less of that fear and much less of that, you know, fearful competition and wondering, you know, am I a man if I've got to be in the same venue as women? So I think it's going to get better as, you know, as the generations go on, but it takes time. These are big changes that we're experiencing.
Absolutely, but it's nice to know that you do see some changes, and I would have to agree with, you know, the younger generation that I'm in touch with. It does seem to be, you know, lessening, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
Okay. What? Let's see. I'm trying to think of where to go from here. How about, this is a good one. How do you get a man to go to therapy with you? And then, of course, the follow-up question is, how do you get a man to go to therapy alone? So say you're in a marriage or in a relationship and you feel like there are issues and he doesn't. He's got to know there's something, some kind of issue, because the relationship just isn't as good as it was. And he's aware of that. But why are men reluctant to go to therapy, and how do you get them to go?
Well, there's a couple of issues that we deal with. One is that the truth is that men have the experience often that to make yourself vulnerable to particularly another man, but also to a woman, scares you. So the idea of going to a therapist where you're being asked to talk about your personal life, to reveal yourself, to, in a sense, make your problems be shared in an environment where other people know. For men, that goes counter to the way most men are raised. If you think about how most girls are raised, it's very common. You share your problems with your friends. You know, you talk in small groups. All the women's magazines talk about how do you solve this problem, how do you solve that problem. That's not the male environment. So women need to understand this goes very counter to what is normal in male-raised society. The way you overcome that is to recognize how you get men involved in things that scare them. And what I've found is the best way to get a man involved in therapy is not to try to get him to go to therapy, but for the woman herself to start therapy if she thinks that would be helpful. I talk to a lot of women who have men have an irritable male syndrome problems that affect them, and I say, well, you start and get involved. I'll teach you how to relate to the man, how to draw him in, how to make him want to come rather than trying to get him to come. And one of the ways that often gets men started is I call the guy up and I say, look, you know, your wife started therapy, and I'd like to talk to you to get your ideas of how I can help her more effectively, not how I can help you, but how I can help her. And most men, you know there's something wrong, and they're happy to help us help their wives because they want their wives to do better. And in the course then of breaking down some of the fears, as I talk about how to help their wife, they often go, well, you know what, there's actually a little problem that I'm having. Could I talk to you about that?
That but is...
You've got to get the men involved in a sense, just like we know of getting kids involved or getting anybody involved. You take them where they are, not where you are.
Right, and that is such a great response, and I think that will really help a lot of women because it works. I'm sure it works.
Yeah, it does work. There's hardly, I'll talk to women and say, he'll never go to therapy. You know, he's refused. I've tried to get him to go for years. I call him up one time and say, look, you know, could you help me with your wife? She's really struggling. I'd really like to hear your perspective. I'm sure you've got some ways of looking at this that she just doesn't see. Oh, sure, I'd be happy to talk to you. And then that almost always then leads to him saying, yeah, sure, I'd be willing to talk to you again.
Yeah. Oh, I love the way you work with people, Jed. That's really neat. Okay, this woman asked many questions, and I'm going to read them first, and then we'll go back just so you can see where she's going with it. What major changes do men want to make in their midlife and onward in their years? What are the main drivers for those changes that men make at midlife? Is it related to improving health, sex, self-image, increasing salary, etc.? Do men develop closer relationships with other men when they get older? And do much older men feel more physically vulnerable to attacks, thefts, when they are frailer? Or do they not feel this until something happens to them? That is from someone, let's see, that is from a woman in Canada.
Okay.
Okay, so what major changes do men want to make in their midlife?
Well, obviously, you know, different people have different priorities, but the common things that I hear from men are they want to increase their energy level. They want to feel more vigorous. You know, that's a across the board one that is true for most men.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, what they'll say is, and I want to get rid of the stress. I'm just feeling stressed out. Many men, when we did the survey on the irritable male syndrome, one of the highest responded questions was to a statement, I feel like I want to get away from it all. You know, there's a real feeling that many men have, I want to get away and start over. You know, I want to get away from all the stresses. I want to somehow, so that's a second area that men are experiencing is stress reduction needs. And the third, you know, has to do with just health and well-being. Many men want to lose weight. Many men want to get more exercise. It's very similar, you know, to where a lot of women are at midlife.
Right. It sure is. And it seems like then the main drivers for those changes are the health and stamina and sex and self-image, et cetera.
Yep.
Same thing as women, really.
It really is. We just express it differently, and you have to approach men differently. For instance, let me give you an example. I tell women that the mode of engagement for women, if you think about it, what women tend to be comfortable with is face-to-face involvement. That's why therapy works for them better than it does for men, because generally in therapy you sit face-to-face, right? And you look in each other's eyes and you talk together. Well, what I tell them is men often, not always, but often communicate better side-by-side rather than face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because if you think of how men are built, you know, physiologically, and where we come from in our biological heritage, the hunters, the male hunters, the only time that you have eyes looking at you is when you've got a predator just about ready to eat you. So men are generally not comfortable, you know, with eye-to-eye communication. That's not across the board.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to engage men, I tell women, go for a walk together. Talk in the car together. You know, side-by-side communication rather than face-to-face. And you'll see a lot of men who you can't get him to talk, you can't get him to engage. When you go for a walk together or you engage side-by-side, they're much more communicative because it's a style that's more comfortable for them.
That's pretty amazing. and I believe that. And it's interesting because the whole car thing is something that I often learned when for parenting children, too. You know, when you have something you really want to talk to them about, do it in the car. Now, that's so they can't jump out
yeah.
and walk in the other room or,
right.
you know, whatever. But it's interesting. I've never heard it explained that way, and it makes a lot of sense. Okay, her question about men feeling more physically vulnerable is interesting. And it's one that I hadn't thought about, but I know with my father, as he's gotten older, he's become more pretty much handicapped. And,
mm-hmm.
And you know, I know for a fact now, but even several years ago, he was feeling less and less safe as he was out and about.
Right.
And I guess the older you get, the more you feel physically vulnerable.
Well, only here's the thing I tell people in midlife and older is that up until we're 40 to 50, regular exercise was kind of an option. You could do it or not because we had so much inherent vigor and physical energy. You know, we could exercise or not. When you hit 40 to 50, exercise is mandatory if you're going to stay healthy. It's just that simple. If you're not moving every day, and many people, you know, sit at computers or sit in offices, you're going to deteriorate. You're going to, you know, start running down. And then, you know, when your back hurts or your body aches, you don't feel like exercising. So I tell, you know, men and women, particularly the men I talk to, is you got to join my exercise class. You got to come and be moving, you know. Don't tell me about your problem here, there, and elsewhere, about your wife and about your kids. Let's start walking together.
Mm-hmm.
In my town here, we sponsor regular walks for people of all ages, but we're getting people of all ages. And once you are active, we've got a guy, you know, who walks regularly, who's 96 years old.
Mm.
You know, he doesn't feel like he's deteriorating at all.
Right,
he's getting
right.
older. So we don't have a lot of what we accept about aging. This is true for both men and women, but particularly for men, you know, is this deterioration is natural. It's part of aging. It's not. You know, it's part of a sedentary lifestyle where we eat too much and we move too little.
And that's so true. And I would have to say that the people that I admire the most, the elderly that I admire the most, are the ones who have stayed active.
Right.
And you know, I know an 86-year-old woman who works 6 days a week, and, oh, my gosh, she's got more energy than anybody I know, but it's because she's just never stopped. She has her health, fortunately,
right.
and she just keeps using it, you know. So, I totally believe.
They go together. You have your health because You move, you know.
Right.
And
that's exactly
right. The more you
right.
move, the more you exercise. We're built to move. Human beings, you know, are built to be moving. The only time human beings in our natural environment stop moving is just before we die. That's the body's message that says, conserve the last bits of your energy because you're going to die soon. So if you stop moving, basically what you're telling your body is, get ready to die.
Right, and I would have to say that our generation is much better at staying active than
yep,
prior
absolutely.
Generations. And a lot of it has to do with us ushering in the health craze, too. But, okay, so let's see. We pretty much answered her questions. We talked about men and women in the workplace. What about why is it that men drop bombs? And let me explain. This woman writes that, I know a woman whose hubby never wanted adventure or to travel. He walks in on his 50th birthday and announces he's leaving her and has cashed in his CD. He was going to live in Paris and basically walked out the door saying, ta-ta. She didn't have a clue. Now, that's just one example, but I'm sure we all have other examples. I know
yeah.
I have a friend whose husband basically never communicated. She really didn't know there was a problem. They socialized
right.
together. They went out, they did fun things, and she thought They were having a good time.
Right.
He never communicated otherwise until the day he said, I'm leaving.
Right.
So why, I mean, and it probably goes back to the whole communication piece, but, you know, why is it that it's like this all or nothing at the last second?
Well, there are two reasons that I've found that are common. The first is that men and women, you know, want things to be good in their relationship. The longer you're in relationship, in a sense, the more we have to lose, the more fearful it is that, you know, some problem is going to cause things to ruin our marriage or to split us up. So one of the things that happens is all these little problems, these little things that never get said build up, and they build up. And particularly guys, you know, we push it aside. We don't want to look at it. And one day we come home and we look at our wife and go, I can't do it anymore. And that's when they drop the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one set of things. These things that build up, they build up. That when I talk to women and I say, be honest, weren't there some inklings that you saw that you kind of ignored looking back on it now, that he wasn't as happy as he seemed? Almost every woman will say, yeah, you know, the truth is, he was giving me some messages, but I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to believe that things were difficult. I wanted to believe things were fine. So help, you know, the guy talk about these things. That's one side. The second is that for many people, they hit this midlife crisis or this male menopause passage or andropause, and because they're blindsided themselves. They don't see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they really were feeling fine with the relationship. But all of a sudden, they wake up one day and they go, oh my God, you know, I don't have that many more years to live. I'm over halfway. It's like peak oil. All of a sudden, you're coming down the other side, and this huge change just hits you. And you go, I've got to make a change. I've got to do something different. And because it hits men out of the blue, they really don't understand it and they don't know what to do. And often these large changes that they don't understand get translated into, well, if things are strange and something needs to change, the only thing I understand and that I'm familiar with is, well, maybe I don't love you and I need to leave.
Mm.
You know, it's what they know to interpret big change. And again, often when we go deeper in the therapy that I do with men and their wives, we find out that's not really what they wanted. They didn't want to end the marriage. What they wanted to do was figure out a way to totally change their lives, and they didn't know how to do that. And many of them assumed that the only way to change is, I guess we'll have to go our separate ways. And when I work with the people, we find out there may be a lot of ways that you can change and make radical changes in your life and work out the changes that you need without having to break up your marriage.
Right. But oftentimes, the marriage is the first thing to go.
Well, it can be if you don't address it, obviously, as early on as you can.
Right.
And notice
right.
those early warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
Or secondly, when it comes out of the blue and he says, well, I don't love you anymore, or I love you, but I'm not in love with you, and many would have heard that
mm-hmm.
phrase, that rather than going, oh, my God, it's all over, you know, you go, hey, maybe I need to, you know, call a therapist, or we need to find somebody that really understands these issues and help us address them and see whether there's some other options other than bye-bye, we've got to go.
Right. Right. So basically, the message to women is, if you have a hunch that something might not be right, don't ignore the subtleties.
Right.
And try to address them while walking or driving in a car.
Right.
Anything
exactly.
else?
Well, and the third part of that is if it comes out of the blue, as it still does from some, and often the guy will go, I really don't know what's going on. I just know, you know, I've got to change, or, you know, I don't love you anymore, rather than either freaking out, which obviously it's hard not to when it's out of the blue
mm-hmm.
and you're 20 or 30 or 40-year relationship is threatened, but to listen for, okay, well, let's talk about it. What's going on? You know, because saying I want to leave is a perceived solution to some unmet needs that the guy has.
Right.
And if you can get to what does he really need? Is it freedom? Is it change? Is it, you know, an ability to not feel so pressured or so much feeling responsible for everybody else, or to be able to find his own direction or his own future, to find his calling in life. You know, once you get at what's really going on, then often we can come up with solutions that are going to work both for the man and the woman.
Right, but communication is key. It just seems like, in all relationships.
Sure.
But, yeah. Sure. Okay. The next question is kind of funny, and I'm not sure that you'll be able to answer this one. But anyway,
I can answer anything.
All right, here's
absolutely
one for you.
Absolutely anything. There aren't any strange, too funny questions. Believe me, everybody who's got a question, it's because it's very real in their lives.
Okay. I would like to know why men think it's okay to cheat, even when they have a good wife at home who loves them.
Okay, well, there's a good reason for that. One, it isn't okay, obviously, you know, that most men and women make an agreement when they get married that they're going to stay true to their partner. Most don't say, well, I'm going to, you know, marry, love, obey, and cherish, and you know, cheat occasionally as long as you don't catch me.
Right.
But the truth is that, you know, men and women are different biologically, and, you know, men biologically, and I'm talking biologically, but we are biological beings, there is biologically more value in a man cheating than there is in a woman cheating. And what I mean by that is when I do classes and workshops with men and women, I do a role reversal where I have the women play men and the men play women. And what I say in this group of women now playing men, so you can go through this with me, if all the women that are listening, you know, pretend, okay, for the moment, we're going to pretend that you're men.
Okay.
And your biological duty is to reproduce as many new copies of yourself in your genetic line as possible. So I ask you, as men, how many, you know, babies do you think you could make in the course of a year?
Oh, my.
When you think about it, say, well, as men, right, you could make a lot of babies. If you got a lot of sperm, every woman you, you know, you could impregnate, you'd have another baby possibility, and you'd have more of your genetic material passed on to the next generation.
Okay.
Okay. So now I ask the guys who are now playing women, I say, okay, how many babies could you make in a year? And they say, well, one, or maybe a couple if we have twins. So the point is, biologically, there's a biological drive that makes men more likely to make babies than women. There's another biological reality that we don't like to talk about, but every aging woman is going to come to a time somewhere around 50 where they can't make babies anymore. Right?
Right, right, absolutely.
And it's true, every male who is around 50 can still make babies. Now, that's a biological reality we have to deal with. And so you can say, well, you ought to be true to me like you said you would, but this is part of communication. You have to communicate the reality that, you know, there's that biological desire that a man has, and a woman has too, to reproduce, to make babies.
Right.
Well, but the only way a 50-year-old or 60-year-old man with a 60-year-old wife, unless they're very unusual, can make babies is if that 60-year-old man has sex with a younger woman.
Well, right? I've never thought about that that before.
So these are the kind of things we talk about in the workshops that I do. And once you're able to talk about it, then we can talk about these kind of things. But you can't do it by either saying, you know, why can't men be more, you know, honest, and why do they cheat? Well, obviously some women cheat too.
Right.
But the implication is that you know, why can't men be more like women?
Mm-hmm.
Well, because we're men.
Because you're
know?
Not, right?
No, we're not.
Right.
So we can make that a dialogue where you can talk about, okay, how do we deal with that reality? Mm-hmm. How do you deal with that a male attraction to, you know, younger women is a biological reality? And as you point out, as we now work in environments where you have a lot of people working together and seeing each other and interacting with each other, that reality is going to be something you have to deal with, men and women.
Right.
And I help you deal with that, and you can help by recognizing that biological reality and allowing that dialogue to occur in your own relationship.
Right. All right, well, this one is probably going to have a similar answer then, because she also wants to know why men judge a book by its cover, never seeing the prose and or poetry within. And, you know, a lot of these are generalizations.
Yeah.
You know, but
there are some generalizations that are real, and there's a biological reality, you know, that the reason that biologically males are attracted to young, beautiful women, which is what she means by the, you know, the outer cover, is because biologically young women are reproductively more likely to make babies than older women.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And biologically there is, you know, a young looking face, smooth skin, you know, big eyes, you know, an open smile. These are indicators of reproductive success. Even the waist-to-hip ratio they've found biologically makes you more likely to be able to make more babies, and so that hourglass figure, you know, the Playboy model, is actually biologically attuned to reproductive success.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true for men, right? I mean,
right.
You can have an ugly-looking guy, and he can still make his healthy babies, you know, but women get attracted, let's be honest, to men that are successful or have the trappings of success or the potential of success, because women are, you know, biologically attracted to men who build nice nests, who have resources and are willing to share them with the women.
Right. Gosh, it all makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, it does once you understand, you know, the world of men. And a big part of it, not all of it, but the part that often we don't recognize is that we are biological beings, and that does impact who we are and how we interact. And if we understand that, it can make our relationships certainly more understandable and in the long run, you know, more enjoyable and much more loving.
Right, right. Very good. Okay, I have about two more.
Okay.
What can a female do to get a male to listen, really listen and converse, interject thoughts of value instead of yes, dear, whatever you say, and I don't know, or nothing at all? This is a woman who is interested, who is married and is interested in really conversing with her husband.
Okay. Well, there's three things you can do. First is the, you know, side-to-side communication.
Right.
Okay. Second is make it short. Men's biggest complaint about women is she goes on and on and on and on and, you know, never gets to the point. You know, as an example, when my buddy Lanny calls me up, our conversation goes something like this. You going to play today? Yep. See you at the gym. It lasts about 3.5 seconds.
Oh, boy. Okay, go ahead.
When my wife, because I missed her, when her friend calls her up, they talk about this, they talk about that, they check on the weather, they talk about the kids, the, you know, oh, and by the way, you know, let's make the date to have lunch or work out.
Right.
And so men, when they hear women say, could we talk, their eyes go, oh, my God, this is going to be one of those forever things. So I tell them, make it short, say, honey, I'd like to talk, and I got, you know, a two-minuter max. Can you be with her and hear me for 2 minutes?
Oh, yeah. But that seems so unfair. If women can converse with their friends or other family members without having to pre-think, you know, exactly what they're going to say and how long it's going to take. I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it just seems contrived. I mean,
it is contrived.
And it just
but
has
it's
to
the
be.
Way, you know, if you look at it from the man's point of view, is his view is I'm always having to communicate the way the woman wants. You know, communication is kind
mm-hmm.
of her thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he does, he'll listen, but after the first 2 minutes, his brain has gone to sleep.
Mm.
And so he's just going through the motions. Yes, dear. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she picks up, of course, that he's not listening, and she tries harder, and she talks longer. And so, you know, you're both caught in the cycle where she's not getting the most out of the communication, and he isn't either.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what I'm not saying you have to communicate that way all the time.
Right,
but
right.
But if you can give the guy the sense that you can say what you have to say in a rhythm that works for him. So, you know, many women can learn side-to-side communication.
Mm-hmm.
They can learn to communicate, you know, more pointedly,
mm-hmm.
you know, and more specifically. And then the third thing, you know, that you can do is say, here's how I'm feeling, here's what I need, and here's what I'd like from you.
Mm-hmm. Just short and sweet and to the point.
Yeah, that it's somewhere in that is, you know, I'm really feeling upset because I really, you know, I need for us to, you know, communicate well. Here's what I'd like. Would you be willing to sit and just give me your undivided attention for 2 minutes? And
mm-hmm.
women will tell me, I'd rather get his total, real, present, undivided attention for 2 minutes than, you know, his lack of presence and his uh-huh, yes, dears, you know, for 45 minutes.
Right, right. Well, that makes sense. That makes sense.
And the more you have short communication that works and he goes, hey, this wasn't so bad, then when you want to talk longer, he's willing to because he goes, oh, that wasn't so painful.
So hopefully you can build on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Plus, I tell women, don't expect guys to communicate like your girlfriends.
Right.
You know, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You know, don't make that. Otherwise, you're going to be unhappy with your man. And, you know, if you want a long, heartfelt communication, and I'm not saying that's true for all men. I tend to be one of those guys. I communicate more like a woman. Like you can tell, we've been talking for, what, an hour? And I'm just getting warmed up.
Right, right. And that's
but
a
I'm
good
unusual
thing.
That way.
Right, right. Well, oh, gosh, I had a thought and just lost it that fast. Oh, and it was a comment on that. But anyway, okay, well, so those are good three good suggestions. All right, one last question here that has to do with physical health, and here it is again, how do you get, you know, a man that you love to have a physical?
That's easy.
Okay.
You know, here's how my wife has done it. One is physicals scare the hell out of guys
mm-hmm.
because they're not used to having them. One guy told me, I get my yearly physical once every 18 years.
Mm.
You know, he, we put it off.
Right, right.
If you think about most women, because they're women and they've been going to doctors for their kids from, you know, time they were young, they've gone for themselves for monthly checkups and various gynecological kind of things, they're used to going to doctors.
Mm-hmm.
Men are not. So
mm-hmm.
you have to make him going to the doctor really valuable for him.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that my wife found that makes me really interested in going to see the doctor, which, you know, nobody likes to do, but she tells me that one of the sexiest things that she likes about me
mm-hmm.
is that I take care of myself physically and I go to the doctor. And when I come back from the doctor, there's often a really sexy encounter that she's created, you know, for my return.
Right.
So if you make just about anything for a guy, if you want him to do it, tie it to some really neat reward. And
right.
Sex is a really neat reward. You're going to find out he's going to want to go to the doctor more often.
Right. Oh,
because
gosh.
He associates it not with, you know, a painful, you know, hurtful experience or having somebody make him take his pants down, but, oh, boy, you know, when I get back, you know, my wife thinks this is the sexiest thing, and she loves it when I take care of myself. And since men love to protect and serve, you know, he'll go to the doctor because it makes her feel good, and he's rewarded with something really nice where he wouldn't go if you just nag him.
Right, right. So, it you know, again, it boils down to communication and how we make the men in our lives feel.
Yeah.
and just, I think, a lot of pretty much thinking ahead.
Yeah. And
okay.
Thinking, you know, thinking, I don't know, thinking like a man, but knowing how a man thinks and, you know, communicating to him in the language that he understands. It would be like, you know, if I spoke only English and you spoke only French,
mm-hmm.
and if I just kept talking English and said, well, too bad, you got to learn my language, it might take us a while to communicate.
Right.
But if I really got, well, you know what, I might do better if I learned a little bit of French.
Yeah, well, let me ask. I know you have books and products and different things that you offer on your site. What of those products would help a woman understand how a man thinks the most, or is the answer all of them?
Well, each one, you know, takes a bit of the total and breaks it down. I have a number of e-booklets that I send out to people, and I've got one that's called Everything That You wanted to know about a man but were afraid to ask.
Okay.
So people, I don't have it up on my site because it's a new one, but if people email me
mm-hmm.
and mention that, I'll tell them how to get that. And that's where I put everything that I've learned about why men are the way they are into one place in one simple, little booklet that is short and sweet and easy to read and will tell you, saves you probably years of expensive therapy and save you a lot of money if you can prevent the divorce that's on the way.
Right. Now, let me know when that is that published yet? Or
I have it available. I give it to, people in my workshops mostly.
Okay.
But, you know, to your listeners or your readers, I'd, you know, make it available. It's, an e-book kind of thing. It's not fancy, but it's got all the information, and it's, not too expensive and readily available.
Okay, yeah, because I'd love to help you promote that.
Good.
Because I think that sounds like a winner.
Good. Well, we can talk about how to best get that to people that would find it valuable.
Sure. Okay, now, anything else you want to add? Why don't you tell everybody your web address?
Sure. It's Men Alive. menalive.com. And from there, there's all kinds of books and booklets and resources. People can sign up for my free e-newsletter that I send out each month that tells them about the latest articles I'm writing, what I'm thinking, tips, questions answered, just a nice way to stay in touch with what I'm doing and to give people a resource that they can use to help themselves and help their relationships.
Okay, and then, Jed, just because not everyone that listens to this will have listened to part one of the series, do you want to tell them about the quiz that you have on your site?
Sure. There's a specific quiz that you can get to. It's called the Irritable Male Syndrome Quiz that you can get to from my website or directly by going to imsquiz.com. And it was part of the research study that I originally did that really helped us understand better what goes on with men who are irritable, who are angry, who are depressed. And it's a questionnaire that men can fill out or the women that love them can fill out. And it really will give you a score to help you know if this is a problem in your life. And then if it is, there's lots of resources of what to do to make things better.
Okay, very good. Now, let me just see if anybody has a question before we sign off. We have just a couple minutes. Does anybody have a question before we go? And if so, you need to push star 6. Okay, it sounds like we covered everything that we didn't cover last week, and I'm sure there's more.
Good.
Yes. So thank you very much, and we will make these audios, and actually the audio from last week and the teleseminar has already been sent to our members, and now that this one's finished, we are going to put the package on the home pages just to help spread the word about your work, Jed, because I think you're doing great things.
Appreciate it.
Okay, thanks so much for being on the call, and we'll be in touch. Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.